So Louise Farquharson interviewing Dale Hayworth on the 7th of October 2005. General topic of conversation will be potlatches and their importance in Tsimshian culture. Firstly, I've been reading up generally on just in different books that about the Tsimshian culture, and in each one potlatches come up as a really important aspect of culture. So am I right in thinking they're held for different social events, like of importance, like marriages and births? So I was wondering how if potlatches vary at all, like from celebrating different events? Or
yeah, they vary. The ones that I'm basically familiar with is mostly the memorial type potlatches, where somebody, usually in a family, a family member, is going to say, okay, I'm going to put this potlatch on. And usually by that time, maybe a year later or several years later, there's no time frame as to when this person says he's going to, come up with the, because there's a lot of preparation involved. And in most cases, on the average, it's going to take a couple of years.
Yeah, like your father's.
You're gonna have to do all the food gathering, because you're gonna have to feed everybody that's gonna attend the potlatch. And it could be like 300 or 400 people.
Wow.
So you have to put this all together, the logistics of it all together, and come up with the food, and usually all native foods in that time frame. And like I say, it may take you 2 years, it may take you a year, or 3 years, you don't know. But it's up to you, and you're going to have to be resolute and focused and all that, you say, okay. And as you go along, as you start into it, and you start seeing the time frame developing, because of how fast you're putting this together.
Yeah.
And you can say, oh, perhaps it'll take me 2 years to do this. And you stick with that 2 years for a while. There's times that, you misjudge it. And you may have to say, okay, later on, I'll do it next year, the third year. And that's happened a lot. But you have a lot of the family members helping you out. The clan that you are a member of, a lot of those clan members are going to help you. A lot of them are family, a lot of them are friends of the family, and they're gonna give you a hand. Even in the food gathering, the making of give away things, like moccasins and whatever. It doesn't matter, blankets usually. They're usually all handmade, and they're highly prized, by the person that you're going to give it to. It has meaning. When a person says, okay, when they make a blanket and they give it to somebody, usually somebody close or a friend, when they see it's homemade, that says to the person, you take care of
it. Definitely time and effort.
Right, because a lot of time and effort they put into it. It takes a long time to make a blanket. Just turn it around. All these things happen, though, like my wife and I put a potlatch on for her daughter. This is different.
Right.
It's the way the Athabascans do it up here. But I seen the format down where I come from is pretty similar. I'm thinking that it's that way among all the different tribes of Alaska.
Right.
So the format is basically the same, with local customs dictating, customized way of their doing it.
And the gifts and decorations and clothing.
Like I say, they make beaded gloves, you know, they'll take a, today they'll take a leather glove made out of deer skin that you purchase, you know, commercially, and they'll put a back of beading on it and put some fur around it, bear fur or moose fur, you know, things like that. A lot of beadwork on the backside. Those are highly priced. You know, they give those out, you know. And I got a pair of moccasins, same way.
Yeah, that's Sinsha, not Athabascan.
Yeah, no, they do that as well. See, that's what I'm saying, these lot of things are similar. So what I'm saying right now is trying to give you a generalized way that the population are run. Now, I can't really give you that much on the Tsimshian other than what the experience I went through. And there, like I say, our culture, or the missionary that took my people and took them out of the culture over in Canada and moved them over there, tried to eliminate our culture. And I would say he was successful at it. And so for a long time, starting with my grandparents and my parents and then now my generation and subsequent generations, up to say 10 years ago, didn't know how to handle potlatches. So my dad's potlatches was one of the very first potlatches that were given in the Tsimshian culture down there.
Wow.
And I told you in the class that they had to do a lot of researching back to Canada.
That must have been difficult to get start.
And then you go over there, a lot of it's been diminished too over there. So a lot of the younger generation don't know why a lot of things are done. They say, we do it to say, but we don't know why. And so you have to go around and search and ask different, you know, go from village to village in Canada and go all over down there, you know, and ask. They do it one day just about all over the same way, pretty same format. And we piece it together and then we come up with our, now we bring all this information back to Metlakatla on the Alaska side, because there was a old Canadian in Metlakatla. So we bring it over and then we incorporate it and say, okay, now let's build our progress pattern and our heritage back.
But not just for the sake of it, to actually mean something as well, because, you know.
Try to recover as much as we can, you know, as a start.
But and also just make it your own tradition, not just something that's happened in the past.
And so we try to make it as close as we can from all the information we gathered about it, you know, and try to use those old-time formats.
Well,
a lot of it's, you know, because there's so much missing, we had to say, okay, we'd have to go around and ask elders, say, what if we do it this way, would that be acceptable? And that elder's going to have to decide yes or no, you know, that this is going to be acceptable. So whenever a palace goes on, the younger people look to the elders for guidance. You know, based on what they remember. So you see, doing it that way, there's going to be change, you know, through the years as they come up with it. They still try to honor it, you know, and use it in the best way they can as they remember, in the old way. It's not documented or anything like that. You know,
no.
It's just a memory. And then the totem poles, and regalia and stuff like that. Some of it's captivated in and things like that. But you got to know how to interpret these different things on the regalia and on the totem pole. Because supposedly, you know, a well-versed person on totem pole interpretation, they got to go just like you're going to school, learning how to read, write, and stuff like that.
Like Foxley?
Yeah, he did that. He's really one of the key figures in the Simpson people.
Right.
Because he's doing a lot of that. He's been primarily trying to recover the artwork of the Simpson people, how they dress, all the different masks and stuff like that. You look at a lot of these library books that, you know, taking pictures of a lot of these old time people who wore their blankets and their hats and their gloves and their clothing, all the heavy beadwork and all that stuff. Some of them, you know, today, if you were to buy or sell it on the open market, like a blanket, you know, you're talking $4,000-$6,000, you know. And so that's what these curators are selling them at.
What, museum pieces?
Yeah. And a lot of it was over the years have been stolen. And now there's a big drive to try to get these that are now in the museums and been there for hundreds of years to get them back to where they originally came from. Because they have some real strong meaning among Native people. It wasn't until recently that they said, okay, we gotta put these things back. And it's a big ceremony when that happens.
Yeah.
You know, when they bring something back, they have to have an acceptance ceremony. It's like a big potlatch that goes on, just, you know, that's what's happening now. And it's gonna probably go on for a long time because there's artifacts out there in museums that a lot of those people don't want to let it go. And so they're having to go, get legislative action taken to get those people to release those artifacts back.
So they have potlatches almost to celebrate bringing artifacts back, which is obviously a new concept because before, when potlatches existed, it wouldn't have been.
Well, these, like I said, the potlatch in general is used for a lot of things. Burials, marriages, just a happy time, you know, things like that, or honoring some big chief, or things like that. And there's annual events that occur that podcasts are put on for.
Such as?
You know, they're not, you know, just like we have in the United States here, we have George Washington Day and Lincoln Day and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, somebody that's famous.
In the Simpson culture.
Yeah. They're treated in the same manner when we remember on this particular day. You know, the thoughtless. For that time. You know, these speeches and things like that, and dancing and feeds going on, you know, this, some of them last a week, you know, and so all that, the, whoever puts it on, you know, whatever client puts it on has to provide all that logistics for that.
It sounds amazing, it really does. It sounds like nothing we have in Western culture, like the,
they have giveaways, they call it, we call it the day giveaways, I don't know what they call it back then, but you know, we have these great big halls, or I'd like to say a gymnasium back home. The entire floor was that deep in giveaways. Three or four feet in the whole floor. And it'll take all night for them to give that away.
And they're all handmade gifts.
And lots of it, some like what I did personally for my dad, I bought elegant grease. On the Canadian side, before I came over, I came down to Fairbanks and stopped in Terrace and bought 10 gallons worth of grease.
Is that the grease you were talking about that you still
take grease at the moment?
Yeah.
And I put them in little containers there, you know, about that big. They're expensive. I bought $500 worth of grease.
Wow.
And I took it and put it in little containers that was going to be my dear wife for the bottomless. And each one of us brothers and sisters did something like that.
Wow. So what properties does radiant oil have?
Pardon?
What properties does that oil have?
We use it for a lot of things. We use it like Crisco, you know, olive oil, or you know, that we use today. Used to be what the olive grease was used for, cooking grease.
Right.
You know, frying, deep frying, things like that.
So, what kind of, looking at the food, it seems like a really important aspect of the celebrations as well, and I'd like to talk about kind of gifts as well in detail, but would a lot of the food be kind of like gathered like themselves, like the fishing and mm-hmm. really, right. what kind of...
Salmon, all the different kinds of salmon.
Okay.
You know, they can be fresh or they can be processed through drying, there's many different ways that's done, or they can be jarred or canned. A lot of fish are done in various ways like that. There's something like salmon, and there's a Dungeness crab. There's seaweed. And I talked at length about that in the class.
Yeah.
All kinds of berries, wild berries, sound berries, papa berries, bean berries, laughing berries, those are the main ones, I think. May have missed some.
And a lot of it, yeah, has to be preserved due to the length of time it takes to prepare the pot latch.
Right.
So.
Another one that is real delicacy, not a delicacy, but like if you think about ice cream and a milkshake today, it's a favorite among the people. They used to call it ish. And what it is soap berries. And you preserve those in little jars. Even the way I've seen it is a little jar is maybe half pint. And you could give them away, but they last a long, long time, and they make this frothy looking, almost like a whipped cream out of it. And what they do is they take these devil club leaves, the underside of the leaves are all got these thorny needles underneath. They fold it around your hand like that, and the women do, and tie it, and let the needles stick out. So the upper side, or the top side, it's not a rough texture, but there's no needles there. All the needles are on one side, on the underside. You take that, and you wrap it around your hand, the soft side, that doesn't have the needles on, and you grab it in a way, and you stick it in a bowl with this ash in there, and you squeeze up all the berries that are all squished up and crushed inside its juice, they have juice in them, and then you add water to it. It's almost like a soap,
right.
You start mixing it, and with that devil club lean, you use it as a beater.
Right.
And because it's got needles on there, it helps build up that texture.
Yeah, consistency.
Yeah.
So it tastes pretty good.
Yeah,
doesn't?
And you add sugar to it, a little bit of sugar, and it tastes really good. It's a favorite. Kids really like it. It's like candy or ice cream cone or something like that. And like I say, it's like the consistency, it gets about, when you beat it enough, it'll get like the consistency of whipped cream, that texture, and spoon it out.
Yeah, so this is quite based on like fish and seafood. So I'm guessing other potlatches would probably be like completely different foods would be served. And
mm-hmm.
So like the Athabascans would they?
No, up here the Athabascans, they have fish that they get out of the rivers, you know, and king salmon is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's several different species of salmon, the chum, the silvers, we call them coals back home, and chums we call them dogfish, and king salmon, they call them chinooks up here, they call them king salmon back home. We got a Simpjan name for it, but I don't remember where it was.
Mm.
And the name for all of them, in fact, all the different species. And they actually, they have a lot of, you know, Simpjan for all the different berries. In fact, I remember them using it, but I just don't recall how to pronounce them.
That's
nice.
So normally there's quite a few potlatches within a year, or is it normally?
Yeah, it can be. Sometimes they'll combine them.
Oh, right.
You know, so especially if they're similar in type, you know, like a memorial potlatch, there may be several families that will come in together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, it might be smaller potlatch, and say, okay, let's combine them. They'll share in the gathering and you know, the foods and everything, and combine them. Same way with the giveaways. They'll split up. You know, each one will have their own giveaway, but we'll do it at the same time.
But they work together on food.
Yeah, the foods are all going to be done together by the different families if there's several.
But the gifts are more personal.
Pardon?
The gifts are much more personal and specific to each family. So would that be only combined ceremonies if you're in the same clan, or could you have combined ceremonies for?
It could. I don't know how that is now. See, I might be sticking my stuff on the wind here, but usually I would seem to me like it would be in the same clan. I'm not certain about that, because usually, clan-wise, you know, if you're going to give an individual a potlatch, the clan members have to help you, even though, say, your family was giving the potlatch. People that are a member of the clan outside the family are obligated, committed to helping that family. Say on that basis, it would almost have to be families in the same clan that would give it at the same time or combine them.
So, do you think that bringing back potlatches is one of the most important aspects of generally overall bringing back Tsimshian culture? Do you think there are key parts?
It's the very heart of it, really. You know, when you bring that back, all the rest of it will follow.
Yep.
And now we got the dance, and we got the reggae, and we got the lot of that. A lot of the clan emblem, you know, their crest, so to speak, each clan group, the wolf, the raven. And just like that blanket I got with the killer on it, they've got their blankets with their crest on it.
So, what other. What are the ways of there being bringing back? Like, I mean, Boxley works on totem poles a lot.
See, that you know, there's something he took on personally that he was going to bring back, and that was the dancing, mainly. And of course, to have a dance group, you're going to have one with all the regalia and everything. You know. So he had to research that and say, okay, what does the regalia consist of? And so he had to go to Canada to find out what, you know, what that was. And they had all the hats, you know, the masks, and the blankets, and the undergarments, you know, that came with, and the moccasins, and they all had all this heavy beadwork, and then there were drawings on them, you know, that were sewn right into it. You know, he had to find out what materials went into all this stuff that were commonly used over there. And he tried to follow it and research it, trying to do his research as accurately as he could to try to capture the whole thing, the way it was done in the old days.
Were all the materials, I mean, they would have been initially used in Canada, but were they all available in Malacala? Is it quite similar resources that
around? Well, you know, like the blankets, a lot of the colouring that went into it was gotten from berry juice, you know, the reds and the blacks and the primarily in our clams. Actually, it was from berry juice, or could be from the shells of clams, the white part,
right.
And a lot of the buttons came from the shell, because the inside is pearly looking.
Yeah.
And so they use that for the buttons. When you look at the button, you can see the mother of pearl look on it. Mm. You look at the hats, they made a lot of them, they use a lot of the local grass that grows there. And they'll dye them with these various colors.
From the berries?
Some are from the berries, some that. There was a red, I forgot where the red came from, the primary color.
So mainly the blues would have been from the berries, I think. The dark and purple blues.
I remember them my dad discussing that one time, but I have to think about that for a while. There were sources that he mentioned when we were kids, and you know, I didn't pay that much attention to it, because like I say, you know, as a kid, I didn't, culture wasn't a high priority on my, you know, as a kid. It's something that just recently evolved and said, hey, this is important, I need to know about this.
So that's interesting then. So the colours that were kind of associated with each clan or even group, like say, did the Tsimshian culture as a whole have a colour scheme that they relate to?
You look at all up and down the coast of British Columbia, from southeast all the way down to Washington, even into, I think, into Oregon, where primarily Tsimshian groups, you know, they weren't all Tsimshians. They were, I guess over time they were in one group, you know, but they spread out and went on, and then the clan lineage changed, you know, as years went by. And they were called different names by area.
Mm-hmm.
We were called Tsimshian mainly by, from around the Prince Rupert area, Port Simpson, and then it went south, maybe down to, there's a place about halfway to Seattle called Alert Bay, and all these villages along the way, and along all these islands, you look at that coastline, it's just nothing but islands. And you have all this time. I remember going through there as a young boy, when we played basketball, and you go back there on fishing boats, compete in each one of these villages. We spent a couple of weeks across there, stopping village to village and competing. And it was a big event for them, you know. They put on potlatches for us. And that's another way they celebrate is when you have visitors, you know, they have a potlatch, you know, in their honor. You know, they put out the red carpet, so to speak, for these people, you know.
Yeah. So, with the colouring, so the local kind of berries and whatever else could be used for dye, which we dictate what colour the clan dressed in, I guess. So, I mean, if certain berries were available around the area that they lived, that would be the dyes they used for the clothes and
dictate, you know, whatever resource that was available, you know, like the deer, that all our clothing, a lot of it came from the deer and the bears and all. And a lot of others, there's a lot of smaller, like mink and weasels. Beaver. Up here, like the moose hide is used mainly for shoes and stuff like that because it's heavy, durable. And then the lighter stuff, you know, like what we use back home, the deer skin. But for those that we properly treat it or prepare it, they use different things. They even used to use urine, you know, in the process of human urine to help soften up the material and let that get over, you know. But, you know, they live like that.
Yeah.
And it would create a real soft, textured skin. It would be like, like cotton. And it was properly processed. So they use this for clothing. Doing all right.
Huh? Or should we close it now?
You know, it's up to you. It's your call.
Okay. I think for the first week, I think that's really good. Okay, so that's the end of the first interview. It took place in apartment number 5 in
Walsh
Hall. The entire interview is on side A of this tape.